Hello, this is Jay Numero. You're listening to Life Autistic. It's episode number 673, and I don't know, maybe an exploration into what I talked about in the last episode, which was, God, I don't know if it's cathartic or just a bloodletting or, anyway, so a response to what came before it. And let me go ahead and put the access information here so that you'll know how to contact me. autism@quix.us. I prefer getting emails to anything else because I can think about it without having to respond immediately. Forums and chats are very, number one, they're very engrossing and it doesn't give you really time to think. And I find that I just offend people a lot when I'm throwing stuff out. And I think it's better as an email. And also because if it's part of a forum or a chat, other people can immediately start saying things about it, you know, before you do. And although you can pick up some information off of that, you know, you can get some interesting perspective. The biggest problem is that you just don't, you know, the Life Autistic ends up being for me somewhat of a personal exploration. And I found every time I tried to open it up to a larger group, not just talking to me, which is okay, but talking to each other without me having to get involved, especially because I really don't have tons of time to devote to this. I have a full-time job. I certainly have a full-time family. Gee whiz. You know, this podcast more smacks of a, or at least it has the same delivery method as, like, say, a personal, audio journal or something like that. Even though I hope it's of larger value than just to, like, people who are interested in what Jay's doing today. Because I don't usually talk about that, you know. I talk about what I'm thinking about, what comes to mind, and so in that way, it's not a journal. But in the way I do it, it is a journal. It's just flip on the microphone, and here I am recording. You know, it's not anything more exotic than just that. Excuse me. I don't want people to get the impression from the last podcast that I don't like my wife, or that my wife asked me to do things I don't like to do. You know, that happens in every relationship. You know, we require things of other people that maybe they don't like, maybe they don't want, And it becomes a big question as to what's really important here. I don't know if in previous episodes I have made it sound like that what I want is really very, very important. I think that tends to be a trend. When capitalism is talked about, it's mostly done in a reference of you do things because of its ability to enrich you, or so that you can gain some benefit that you want. You know, often it's put in fiscal terms. You know, how much money am I going to make off of this idea? You know, and I don't think anybody can get completely away from that in our culture, because our culture is so attuned to it, you know. It is said that money is a poor motivator, and that's true. But it is, it's certainly not a bad motivator, you know. I've changed jobs often enough in the past, hopefully not so much in the future, that, and it's typically been for economic reasons, and that, you know, I can't say that completely, because there have been some jobs that I've just left because, you know, a supervisor I didn't like, or things like that. I have been accused of being a person who is probably too easy or too takes the responsibility of sticking with a job a little too lightly. You know, many people go, well, you only did that for 2 years, and that was my record up until my current job, which is almost this December will be 4 years doing the job I have now. And, but before then, it really was, you know, the job I had the longest was two-year jobs. One of them was with the state of New Mexico at the WIC program that had grown dull, and I wasn't interested in, you know. In order to make it more exciting, I would have had to have left and taken on new responsibilities, tried new things, which the person who preceded me, she had done that. She had made kind of a, I wouldn't say a lateral move. It was a diagonal move. She was still doing basically the sort of job she had done before, but on a whole different, for a whole different organization, and doing it for a whole different reason. And I'd gotten really bored with my job, and when a wonderful opportunity dropped in my lap, which was the next 2 year job I had, man, I was ready to go for it. You know, there was really no, well, God, what's going to be the downside to this? I couldn't see any. Couldn't see a one. Going from a boring job to something that sounded at least a little interesting and romantic, you know, which was going to sea. And it was the first job I ever had that was strictly a technology job, as opposed to, you know, well, you're going to be doing something else, and maybe your abilities in technology might be useful. And they always were, but it was the first job I ever took with the express purpose of being a technology person, you know. And after that, I vacillated back and forth, honestly. I'd have a technology job, then I wouldn't, and then I'd have another one, and then I wouldn't, and ultimately had a couple of jobs that were kind of a fusion of home ec and technology. And I liked that one. Now the actual functions of my job that actually looked like what I was doing. I was always constantly nervous when I was doing contract work for the state, because I never felt like that what I was doing was really what they intended for me to do. There was lots of research, which was really good, but they really didn't want me doing research. They did the research. I was hired to do execution, and I'm not very good at that, honestly. I ended up doing research anyway, and I researched myself, I think, right out of a job, you know, because I decided that I wasn't very big on what was happening. You know, it was trying to effect community change on a certain level by going through certain processes of discovery to try to figure out what your problems really were. And I think when we got down to it, we found out that we really had nailed the problems pretty good before, or that these methods that we had come, that had been given to us to explore, were easy enough to be skewed anyway. You know, I felt like that what we had originally come up with as the things that a county health council should be worried about were somewhat skewed by, not by reality like you want it to be, but skewed more by the interests of those serving on the council, specifically those in leadership positions. You know, you would almost, and I'm not saying that this is bad. I'm not saying that this is bad, because groups have to form around ideas and plans, and you really can't do it the opposite way. First start a group and then start making plans. First it has to be some plans, and then all of a sudden a group kind of forms around it, and then you go forward. At least that's always how I looked at it. So I always looked at the whole process of what was trying to be done a little askance, because I saw that the people at the state level were trying to steer things the way they wanted to. You know, they were trying to come up with models that would highlight issues that they were especially interested in, and they thought a statewide initiative was important. And I thought it was the funniest thing. Why not just start your thing? If your real interest is in trying to reduce contracting of HIV, why don't you just say, hey, we're starting a group on a statewide level of people who are interested in trying to control HIV, and let people come to that. It ends up being a political thing, you know. I saw techniques being used, strong-arming, guilt, things like that, trying to keep people working the way certain groups wanted them to, you know. And this happens everywhere. You know, I'm not saying this is specific to these people. This is common, so common that, you know, you almost think this is the only way to do it, you know. First you come up and, you know, and you put together a group, and then you actually reveal to the group what the group is going to be about, and then you do whatever you can to try to keep the group from flying away in a million different directions, or try to keep individual members from just dropping off by using all kinds of weird groupthink techniques, you know, that mostly just try to make you feel, you know, you try to build group cohesion, and you're going, see, that's silly. Doing that in isolation, which was what we did a lot of, was trying to keep this group together. I always said, if we're having group cohesion problems, it must be because the work of the group doesn't inspire that group. And I didn't have a problem with that group either disintegrating or breaking into little pieces and stuff like that. That was fine, you know, because people need to follow where their interests lie. And it doesn't end up being just an issue thing, like, say, you know, I don't know why I keep coming back to AIDS or HIV. You know, you can't just have a group on HIV because different people have different philosophies on how to handle the problem. You know, there's a lot of people that come from the from the standpoint of we should encourage people not to have sex, and therefore HIV, you know, isn't so apt to spread. And there are other people that are going gung-ho trying to find and disseminate cures that don't require behavioral changes. It almost seems like that's another attribute of our culture, is that if there is a behavioral problem, we don't want to, if there's something that's basically driven by behavior, our first idea is, no, we can't ask people to change their behavior. We must find some wonderful way where they can keep their behavior. You know, when it comes to HIV, being able to have any kind of sex you want, any kind of orifice seems to please you. And, you know, you can tell by the way I'm stating it that I'm probably against this, that I'm more for a behavioral solution to what I see as a behavioral problem. You know, there's this weird disease that happens, and honestly, what I think it ultimately ends up being is, you know, this is the fact that the human body was never designed to behave this way. And if you put in the position of behaving, you know, like sticking your penis into people's anuses, this is going to cause problems. There's interfaces that shouldn't be happening here, and it may breed a new weird situation that's unexpected, unaccounted for. And instead of telling people to stop a behavior, one always looks for a pill or a certain therapy that one can use, but that allows that behavior, which I find deviant, to continue. You know, we want people to be able to behave like gays and bisexuals as much as they want to. You know, as a culture, it seems like we really like that capability. And to hell with the consequences. And that's kind of where the research and the stuff goes, is trying to get rid of consequences for actions, instead of saying, you know, these actions cause these problems, avoid these actions, which I think is much more sensible. Anyway, getting back to the whole idea of how people perceive, like what I said about, you know, you could look at it and say, oh man, Lisa and Jay's relationship is on the outs. It's like, no, it's not. When I was coming back, I think, and I think it's this way, I rarely, if ever, I don't remember the last time, I've gone back and listened to one of my podcasts. I might do it several weeks later when I'm putting up the actual podcast information on the feed. You know, I want to at least get a title that at least reflects the first 10 minutes of a recording. Wherever it goes after that, anybody's guess. But I'm never going back, so I'm just going off of my impressions of how it went. It felt like I was falling down a hole there, describing how I felt like I was losing myself in deference to other people's needs. Lisa just happened to be one of those people that have very different needs from me, and her needs get handled, and my needs less so. You know, I can't say they're not being handled. Of course they are, to a degree. I think it's fair to say that hers get taken care of more than mine do, because I'm much more interested in making her happy than she does me. And I can't blame her for that. You know, you can't say, well, she's being all selfish and jerky. Well, perhaps. But more than that, I am something of an enigma. I am something more of, you know, it's really easy for me to help Lisa, because most of her life is composed of, taking care of the menial tasks around home life, you know. You know, she's extremely good at what she does. I can't think that I could do even close. I could prop up the economy of our family as well as Lisa does, just for the simple reason that she's just got so much more experience than I do, and she's thought about it more. You know, how do I save this much money? What makes the most sense? You know, do you spend the money driving to get to somewhere to save so much money? Is that really worthwhile? I think we're starting to get to the point where it's ceasing to be so worthwhile. Anyway, but she can't help me. She can't lighten my load as a computer tech because she has no interest or skill in that. Not that I have any interest or skill I can't say that. I used to wash as I used to do the laundry. Not all of it, but I used to do a pretty significant part. And we're trying to get our kids to do that, just as giving them some jobs to do, contributing to the family. Mostly to lighten Lisa's load. Because she has a pretty heavy one, I think. And I will always consider it heavy, even if evidence comes to say that it might not be as heavy as I make it out to be. I don't care. I'm still going to act like it is, whether reality is or not. And I'm not going to analyze too far. I'm not going to start doing studies and measurements. Because that's not important. What's important more is how Lisa feels. And Lisa feels important, I think, as people, you know, number one, as people value what she does, and number two, by how much people are willing to pitch in and help her with what she does. You know, it's really easy to feel like some kind of a house slave when you're the only one doing all the work and everybody else is kind of lounging around doing whatever it is they want. And it's really easy to fall into that and feel that way. Justifiably, too. You know, when it comes down to places like where we live or what kind of cars we have, things like that, I almost always defer to her. Now, I might not do so graciously all the time. I'm not going to say I'm gracious. And hopefully that was what was coming out in the last episode, was me not being terribly gracious about it. You know, I think in our society, we come up with this weird egalitarian sort of look at, you know, this is the way life should be, this is the way married life should be, this is the way friends treat friends. And it's like, well, but I'm much more of a division of labor person, which I think is more what we had in the past. There were certain roles to be fulfilled by the man and by the woman, and one hoped that one person wasn't working particularly harder than the other one. You know, from just a cost analysis, Lisa's bring this up all the time. When I kind of go, well, you know, I sat around all day today kind of waiting for a phone call to come. And I filled my time with things, and I do have a couple of little projects, but by and large, I talk myself out of projects because, honestly, most of the projects just aren't, you know, don't interest me in the long-term way. And, or, you know, I look down the road to what that project will accomplish, and it's like, is this really going to make my life easier? Is it going to make it more difficult? And if it's going to make it more difficult, I don't do it. I tend to say, yeah, let it go. It's not that big of a deal. I'll find something else to do with my time. And so I typically do. And but you know, I guess I come too much from a background of physical labor, which I think is kind of funny because neither side of my family really is a physical labor sort of place. I think, you know, I think I got the ethic from my parents, but it wasn't so much of, you know, it wasn't so much that my father was a steel worker and his father was a steel worker or worked in a mine or something like that. Really heavy physical labor. Haven't had that in years. You know, in generations, frankly. I don't remember that being a big thing. But must be channeling some cultural guilt that says you're just not working hard enough. You know, and the only way to handle that is to just do really physical things on the weekends or after work. And it's like, well, I hope not, because that's not the way life needs to be. I've been trying over time to try to slough off some of those bad feelings when it's like, well, this doesn't really contribute to anything. I could be a manual worker and go to work every day and work really hard and maybe feel very, very physically satisfied. And I don't know if that would be true or not. But be physically dying, you know. Physical labor doesn't, we don't really have a lot of physical labor anymore in a lot of things. You know, we have machines do most of the work now. We may be there, you know, guiding and manipulating that machine to get it to do what it needs to do. But the machine's doing all the work. We're just, you know, we're just steering things, kind of like with this car. I'm not actually getting myself home, the car is, but I am steering it. And that requires some effort, but nowhere near the physical labor needed to actually do the moving. So, I don't know what that has to do particularly with what I was talking about in the last podcast about Lisa and me and how I feel like sometimes that it's all kind of the Lisa show. And sometimes I feel like I'm in kind of a support role. You know, she ultimately makes the decisions that are interesting or that are really important, I think. She ends up making those. You know, and I'll be honest, this is Lisa has veto power over nearly everything. If Lisa says, no, I don't want us to do that, then it doesn't happen. We don't tend to do that. So anyway, I don't want to get resentful about that because, you know, it's usually very practical circumstances that make this important. You know, the biggest things are, you know, Lisa spends more time in our house, in our home, so it's very important that it is more, that it suits her purposes more than it suits mine. I'm gone a lot. I travel a lot. Excuse me. Oh. And so therefore, when I do get home, I think the expectation of almost everybody is I'm going to be around the family. And what I really want to do with my time is superfluous. And it doesn't matter because other people have higher call on me than I do. You know, and people say, well, you know, he's gone. He's in that car and he's gone and he's by himself a lot. And That should be enough free time for him. But you go, honestly, oh, it's not fulfilling at all, you know? I find I don't find my time away as fulfilling at all. It's just time away. Mostly not having access to things that I would really like to have access to. Excuse me. See, driving, see, people say, oh, well, you just drive, you sit on your keister all day long and just drive, and you go, you know what, that's some pretty taxing stuff. We said, oh, God, you come home tired from one of these trips, and you go, yes, I'm tired. But, you know, there was really nothing going on that would warrant being tired, you know? You're just sitting in a car, steering with the wheel, you know, maybe using your foot pedal, but often not. I got cruise control. So, yeah, why? And so, it's just really interesting. You know, I don't want you to think I don't love my wife. You know, the fact that I put her often before myself hopefully is something of an indication of that love. You know, sometimes the best person like me can do. And we should make clear in the past that that isn't enough, you know. Just putting her interests first isn't sufficient. There's other, you know, she has a whole basket full of needs, and I'm expected to try to fulfill them all. And I find trying to do that, it really takes away from my time to be able to do things. And I'm not saying that Lisa's demanding about this, because she's not. I am personally demanding of myself to get these things done. Lisa doesn't get particularly upset at me, at least not lately. I think in the past she did. If I was spending more time on other things, she has a real natural hatred for computers. Because I think she felt like it got between us earlier on in our marriage. And I have basically, and I think I did a pretty good job of basically divorcing myself from computers for a long time. And she is tolerating the fact that I have a job that involves computers. Of course, it's all my perspective. I'm sure if you asked her, she would say, oh, no, it's not that at all. You know, and then you have to get into the whole thing, well, is she being honest with herself, or is she just not wanting to look like it's her problem? She wants to shuffle that off on somebody else. And I'm perfectly willing to say I spent a lot of time with computers back then, far more than I do now. And, well, no, I can't say that. When I have free time at work, you know, I exercise that desire gets worked over pretty good. Lisa admits often that she's a very selfish person, and pretty unrepentantly so, I suppose. You know, I think she considers it a character attribute that she can't do a lot about. Or at least from the way she does it, you kind of get that impression that that's what she's meaning. I'm not only am I selfish, I'm not going to be killing myself doing much about it. I expect you to accommodate my selfishness. And if you're working to make me happy, that's an aspect of me that must be appeased, you know. It's all about Lisa. We go, well, okay. But not really. She's kind to me. She treats me nice. You know, do I wish I had more free time? Sure. Absolutely. I'll tell you what the larger problem is. It has nothing to do with Lisa. I think it has to do with me just kind of this is something that comes up in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I think, in one of the later books. When it comes to... it's those cricket people. People from the planet Cricket. They are obsessed. And Scott Adams has some pretty... I think some pretty deep things to say about that fact that people who are obsessed about something, they'll always win. They'll always get what they want, you know. Because other people just simply don't care enough. You know, it doesn't matter to them. Of course, all of his characters are basically, you know, bar hopping, gadfly, you know, thrill seekers. And, you know, when you face with somebody who's obsessed with somebody who's all about just what will bring a moment's pleasure, you know, they just become, you know, life sucks because I don't feel good. And all of a sudden they go, well, here's a drink, and all of a sudden things get a whole lot better, you know. Those kinds of people. You know, of course the obsessed people are going to win. They're going to accomplish what they want to get. And, you know, they always say, well, I'm not going to let anything stand in my way. And you go, what on earth would be standing in their way? Certainly not these people. These people could care less. And I've been finding myself, even though I do have obsessions of a sort, I find myself constantly pushing aside things by saying, who cares? What difference does it make? You know, is it really going to make my life better or worse? Is it, you know, is it stuff like that? I'm a person of very limited means. Now, it may seem like I make good money on paper, make nearly $40,000 a year. And that's an improvement, a good improvement from how much money I've made in the past. Only my boat job, actually, I had more take-home pay. It certainly didn't look that way from the standpoint of income. I was only making $32,000 there, but most of my benefits were paid for in full by my employer. In this case, now, the majority of benefits are paid for by me. And you don't know how much that really costs until you actually face it, until you can actually see the comparison. You know, we were affluent for almost 2 years. You know, we could buy what we needed to buy, we could do some things that we really needed to do, and the money was there and we just did it. You know, but that was between 1997 and 1999. And those days are gone now. Now it's back to just... you need to take care of needs. Anyway. So I don't have a lot of spare money. In fact, I have very little. Every month seems to be a study in, say, you don't have enough. You know, you aren't taking care of things well enough. So, you know, you cut back and you cut back and you cut back. And to the point to where it's like, why bother doing this? Why bother doing that? There's no point. You just try to do interesting things with what you already have, which I think is a good attribute, and I try. But when it comes really down to it, it's like, you know, what difference is it going to make ultimately to the world? You know, and then it becomes a question of, Jay, what are you really trying to accomplish? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know anymore. I don't know what I'm trying to accomplish. At least for a day-to-day, what are you going to do with yourself type of thing. you know, I'm trying to get to the Celestial Kingdom, trying to go back and live with God and be like Him. But I guess my question ends up being, well, you know, should I be preparing for a kind of life like He has? But I don't know what kind of life He has. I don't know what His day-to-day life is like. I don't know if He spends most of His time working, or if He's, just managing things, or if He just says things will be done and they get done, and then He says, oh, I'll take a few days off. This isn't interesting to me. I don't know. I really don't know. So, you know, you really can't prepare for that. So it becomes, well, what should you be doing? And you go, well, the church tells you a lot of things you can do. And it mostly involves, using my friendships to try and do things. And you go, I don't have any friendships. I have acquaintances, but no more, you know, but it certainly gives me no end with any of these people particularly. They know I'm LDS, but doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, but they know I'm here. I've never felt comfortable. I don't think I ever will, just going out and saying, you know, it was easy when I was a missionary because that was my job. So people would anticipate it. They'd see a guy walk up the street with a suit coat on and a tie and with a little name tag, and they'd instantly know, oh, this is a Mormon missionary. This is what he's supposed to be doing. You know, whether they enjoyed that or not was kind of pointless. I was doing missionary work. And now I've got other things to be concerned with, and I can't behave like that anymore. I don't think I should. I don't think it's useful or a good thing to do. You know, it would interfere with my job. I would probably get my job fired. Of course, people would say, oh, no, but you've done something for the good cause. And you go, I don't think this is a good cause Heavenly Father envisioned. So, in part, this podcast, in part, the website, in part, some of the other projects I'm doing have something of a missionary aspect to them, at least in a gospel, you know, trying to spread the message of the gospel aspect. But you know, not in an overly pushy way. I don't like having things pushed on me. I don't care how earnest that person is. That doesn't give him the right to get in my face. And so, by nature, I try to turn that around and say, well, then I shouldn't be foisting myself on others. You know, and that's why this podcast is so excellent, you know. So I'm not forcing anybody to listen to this. It's out there. People can listen to it as long as they want to. They can stop subscribing to it. They can choose which ones they want to listen to and which ones they don't. At any point, you can stop the recording and listen to something else instead. So I find it really good for me. And so, you know, when people say, well, Jay just seems really dissatisfied, and it sounded like I was kind of harping on Lisa as being a component of that, they go, well, no, not really, you know. I am grateful for Lisa because I think if I were married to another person, another woman, I'm that kind of a person, I'm only going to marry women, I'm gonna, ow, get something in my ear. I would have a worse time of it than I do now. I really think I would. So, I'm not particularly, it isn't particular to that problem, you know, and it's not really a problem. It's, you know, it's just basically that I feel like I don't take enough time doing the things I need to do, but I find those things need to be more purposeful and more fulfilling, and my problem is I'm having problems because I find myself constantly saying, oh, what difference does it make? Oh, who cares? Why not just sit here and stare at the paint on the wall? You know, why not just spend my time doing that instead of going through all the effort of pulling something else together which will be of limited value to me? Like, I've been thinking about and pondering a new, writing my own Gopher server software. Right now I use somebody else's, and it's reasonably good, but it doesn't fulfill exactly what I would like to do. But honestly, when it comes down to it, I don't use my website, so I find it really interesting, you know, because web lends itself to collaborations and stuff like that, and I'm not a very collaborative person at all. I can be an advisor, and one can know hopefully where I'm coming from and where my biases are, and I hope I'm free with both my opinions and what I feel like my biases are. And but that's not collaboration, you know. Anybody who talks to you about autism will let you know that mostly what they do, even as small children, is called what's called parallel play. It's not cooperative play where two people are playing together and they're playing with each other. Parallel play just means that you're in the same room, you're in the same area playing. You know, you guys might be playing trucks in a room, but in parallel play, my truck isn't really responding particularly to yours. You know, we aren't working towards some common goal here. My goal may be very different from yours, even though I may be in the same room with you doing that. I've gotten to the point to where I can be a little diplomatic, but by and large, it ends up being either you go with my idea or you don't. And if you don't go with my idea, you know, I am not a team player. I will not all of a sudden just throw my thing away and join whatever everybody else is doing. I will, by and large, just, you know, I may throw that thing away, but, you know, I won't be a contributing member of it either. You know, I'll be glad to be a contributing member if I have a specific role to play, you know. Not a big team. No. I guess I'm trying to describe not being a big team player. Maybe I don't even have to say that, even though some people would say, well, yeah, Jay's part of our team. And you go, no, Jay's really not. Insofar as Jay performs a function that's useful, I don't care who it's useful to, you know. And if it ceases to be useful, my tendency isn't to try to change my role to stay in with the group, you know. That's not interesting to me. It's mostly about, you know, this is what I do. If what I do isn't valuable, then I'll leave. And that's what it is. So no, I'm not a team player. I'm more of an independent contractor / consultant. You know, as long as you need me, I'm there. Once you stop needing me, I'm gone and I'll do something else instead. Well, I think I've made this thing go long enough. I don't think I really addressed anything except just mention it to say, hey, here's what I was thinking about this, here's what I think about that, here's what I think about that. And someday I hope to get down to actually talking about solutions or talking about larger insights. I think I do sometimes, but mostly it's just a free streaming mind, and it jumps from one thing to another, all according to whatever pops into my head. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 673. My name is Jay Nemro. You can contact me at autism, AUTISM, at Quix, Quix, .us. And have a great day.